Parenting is hard for everyone. And for people of color, the challenge of raising children can also bring up racial trauma that goes back generations. Here and Now's Tanya Mosley sat down for a frank conversation with a parenting coach who was trying to understand her own family history and chart a new course for parenting Black children.
When Yolanda Williams got pregnant at 36, she was confronted with a host of emotions. She never really wanted children, partly because of how she felt when she was a child.
I didn't like children and I didn't want to be around them. And I realized, and it wasn't until after I had my daughter Gia, I realized that was because of how I was raised. I felt like I was a burden. And so I saw children as burdens. I didn't see them as the wonderful teachers that they are, that now I can see them as.
While pregnant, Williams went through all sorts of emotions and began a journey of studying up on childhood development and getting to the bottom of her own childhood trauma.
We grew up, you know, kind of poor. And so there was some alcoholism. You know, we got whooped. We got yelled at a lot.
Williams tried reading parenting books and joining mommy groups, but none of what she learned rang true to her experience. The advice from those groups felt like they were for privileged people who didn't have to think much about race or how to navigate oppressive systems and structures. Essentially, she felt like those groups were for middle class and wealthy white people. So she started her own community called Parenting Decolonized. It's an online space that helps other Black caregivers who are trying to break the cycle of racial trauma that stems in part from the legacy of racial discrimination and even slavery. Her goals are to ultimately raise Black children who feel free. I caught up with Williams to talk about her work and what being a decolonized parent looks like. You describe parenting your daughter as being a co-creator of her life. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting. What does being a co-creator look like with a child?
So Gia is 4. She's autistic. She is non-speaking. And I still feel like we are trying to co-create. And I say trying because I don't always get it right. But we are trying to co-create together. And what that means for me is I'm allowing her to teach me stuff. And I teach her at the same time. I learn from Gia a lot. I've learned how to not control people. I've learned that because you can't really have like love and ownership. They can't coexist. And I feel like if we really look into the parent-child relationships, it's ownership-based, the way parents talk about children, the way that we think about their behavior and how it reflects on us, when really it's just a reflection of their immature brains, you know? One thing I never want to do is make her feel like who she is not good enough, because that's how I felt growing up. But as I parent her, I want her to be look at me as not just this authority figure. I want her just to see me as someone that she's safe with, someone that almost like intergenerational, like solidarity, because she is able to make decisions sometimes and do things sometimes that I didn't realize she could do because I didn't let her do them. So it's like me backing the hell off and just being like, let me see what you're capable of. And then when I see she needs my help, that's when I can step in.
So at the heart of your work is your desire for your daughter to be liberated and carefree and confident. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you on that. But when I read that, I thought about how so many times in my life I've heard people say with a little disdain in their voice, specifically Black folks, well, white parents let their kids just do anything, be free, as if that is an amoral position to be in, to let your children be themselves. Say more about that.
Do you hear the programming? There's programming there. That's a program. Be programmed to not see ourselves as free, as equal, as people who are fully humans. We're programmed to see ourselves that way. And they're programmed to see us that way. The thing is, we know historically, because of the violence of whiteness, that our children can be snatched from us at any time. We know this. We discuss intergenerational trauma, but we talk about it from a place of we're passing down this trauma to our children. But what we're really passing down is an awareness of whiteness. What we're passing down is almost like an innate, like, we need to survive this. I'm looking at it more of a, as a survival technique. I'm looking at it as my body can, knows, looking at my daughter, like, I got to keep her safe. But I refuse to be the oppressor in order to keep her safe.
Right. Before we get, though, to that, you first have to work on yourself, like you said, deprogramming yourself. And I want to talk with you about how you got there. What were your triggers when you first became a mom? I mean, mine, for instance, when I realized that trauma was a real thing and it was it was presenting itself in the parenting of my children, was when my daughter was really young and she would cry and whine and I would get angry inside instead of feeling compassionate.
Yeah, me too. Still do. I tell people all the time, like, the best thing we could do for ourselves as parents is see ourselves as human first. Because parent is just another identity. It is not my whole identity. So I want to make sure that I am humanizing myself through this process. I have so many triggers. Excessive crying is one of them. And I think it's because I wasn't able to really cry. Were you able to really cry?
No. In fact, my mom would say, oh, I hate when kids cry. I hate when you cry. Do anything but cry. And so I internalize that.
You internalize that. And so I think that's why it's about investigating and doing that mindset work, right? Because once you start investigating, like, not just what are my triggers, but why are my triggers? Why are they there? You start to really uncover trauma that you didn't even know you had sometimes. So you have to, if you're in survival mode, which I was, you have to be intentional about calming down before you even like are able to engage sometimes. So I would do that. She would be crying and I would calm myself down and then I would pick her up and be able to offer her gentleness. No, I had to just calm myself down. We matter too.
That compassion that you have to have for yourself too. Yes. Because you know it's so consequential, you have another human being who depends on you, and everything you do, you know, has a longer term impact because you see it in yourself with your mother and the way that she treated you. And I'm thinking about how that compassion that you extend to yourself also has to be extended to the people who raised you. How have you come to that in the forgiveness or the understanding of your own mother?
This is a sore point for a lot of folks. I tell folks all the time, everyone at any given point is doing the best they can. And that is triggering for a lot of people because they really be like, my mom did not do her best. And like, unfortunately she did. Her best was traumatic for you. Her best was abusive. Her best was what she had based on her childhood, based on her adulthood, based on her socioeconomic status, based on her ability to be able to manage her emotions. That's the best that she can give you. That hurts to hear because it sucks, but it's the truth. And so when I really understood that is when I was able to extend compassion. And I got to that place after, you know, some years of therapy and really being able to see the person that my mom was and not just my mom. So I could stop believing this lie that I wasn't wanted or that I was a burden in some capacity. And I realized it had nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with me.
How do you open this up beyond privileged people, though? Because I'm still going back to that fight or flight. So many of us are still in that.
Yeah. I mean, accessibility, I mean, is a privilege, right? So just acknowledging that I you know, me building this is privilege, but also you don't have to go all the way in. The easiest way to do this is just ask yourself why. So if your child is struggling and they're just like, I don't want to go to school. And instead of you saying, you're going to go to school, it's questioning, well, why don't you want to go to school? And every time every time you get an answer, you not only ask them why, but you're asking yourself why about your response to them. So if their response is, well, I don't like this, and you start to feel yourself getting upset, you start asking yourself, why does this upset me? Why am I feeling this way about my child's response? Because then you start to answer them, not from a place of parenting hierarchy. Like, I'm the parent, you should just do this. But you start to see them and hear them and be able to collaborate and co-create with them.
That was my conversation with parenting coach Yolanda Williams about raising liberated Black children and breaking the bonds of intergenerational trauma. She also has a checklist for caregivers about being more intentional with children. It has some gems like, what need is my child communicating? And will my response build or break my child's spirit? We'll have that checklist at hereandnow.org. And for the full conversation, check out my podcast, Truth Be Told, on Apple Podcasts.